We're holding on Tzadik Ches Amud Beis, 10 lines from the bottom. We learned in the Mishnah, and we said that a person contracts to build a house for somebody, then there are certain minimum sizes that will be considered a house, that will be considered a building for the respective purposes. Whatever kind of building it is, we said the height of it, it mentioned the floor space, 4x6 for a refis bakar, for a barn, 6x8 for a small house, 8x10 for a big house, etc. Each one of them, the height of the house is expected to be the average of the length and the width. So for example, an 8x10 house, the height would be 9 amos. And the Mishnah had said, the Mishnah had said, Raya Ladover, proof for that. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, I'm a Kabinian Hechel. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says that it's like the construction of the Hechel. Now, if the Mishnah had said, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, I'm a Raya Ladover, then there's no question, obviously, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is the one that's saying that. But since the Mishnah says, Raya Ladover, and then it says, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, so the Gemara asks, when we say, Rumi Kachatzi Oka, Bachatzi Rochboy, the height is going to be half the length plus half the width, Raya Ladover, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, I'm a Kabinian Hechel, the question is, Raya Ladover Man Katoni Law. Who's saying those words, Raya Ladover, and who's saying like the Binyan Ahech? Ikadam Reb Shimon Gamliel Katoni Law. Some say it's Reb Shimon Gamliel saying that. V'hochi Katoner, v'hochi Kamar. So the Mishnah means Raya Ladover Minayin. Where do we have a proof for this idea that the height should be the average of the length and the width? Amar Reb Shimon Gamliel, Akoka Binyan Hechel. So Reb Shimon Gamliel is saying it's like a Hechel, which was 40 by 20 and 30 amas tall. 40, 20, 40 and 20, and the average of that is halfway between those is 30. So according to that way of looking at it, the whole statement is from Rav Shimon Gamliel. In other words, a Tana had asked, Raya Ladover, where is the proof? Comes from Rav Shimon Gamliel. I'll tell you where the proof is from the Binyan Ahel. The Ikadama Tanakama Katani Law, others say that no, the Tanakama is saying that's like a Binyan Ahechel. Rav Shimon Gamliel, Asmuri Kamasma. So Rav Shimon Gamliel is replying by wondering at that. Bahacha Kamala the Tanakama. He's saying to the Tanakama, Raya Minayan, where are you bringing a proof from that it should be the average of the length and the width? Binyan Ahechel, you're trying to bring a proof from the construction of the Ahechel. You have to ask Rav Shimon Gamliel, Otokula Alma Kabinyan Ahechel Avdi. Does everybody construct their houses like the Hechel? So you, Tanakama, are saying that we're going to use that as an example. That's not necessarily a valid paradigm to use for everybody else. So you could learn the Mishnah either way. Tanya, we learn in a bright, so Acherim, which usually means the mayor, says, Another opinion. So here we have an admission that the rumor, the height should be half the length plus half the width. So the average of the length and width. Now, Acherim, instead of saying, rumor kikorosav, the height of the building should be equal to the lengths of the beams that are used for the ceiling. So you have, in other words, you have the walls are built, then you have beams going across, and the ceiling on top of those, the beams equal the width of the house. So in other words, according to Acherim, the height of the house should equal its width. So let's say, for example, with the big house that we said in the Mishnah would be 8x10 amos. So according to what we had in the Mishnah that had the proper height for it should be 9 amos, the length, the half, the distance between the length and the width. According to Acherim, it should be 8 amos because the width of the house is 8. Therefore, the ceiling beams are 8 amos long going from one end to end, and therefore the height should also be 8 amos. So the Gemara asks, why phrase it to kairosa, the length of the beams, the lema rube kairochba, just say the height should be like the width. The answer is, he both same a base in a loy rova. One possibility is because houses are often a little wider at the top. The way they built walls in those times was, it was very common to have the wall thicker on the bottom and narrowing as you go further up. Nowadays, sometimes they do it, but not as much.
Old houses, all thick in the bottom,
you know? Some, I guess. Not necessarily as noticeable, but I don't know. Okay, whatever. But for example, you go to the coastal, you have the little windows built into the floor over there where you can look down at the levels of the coastal that are underground, and you can see they get wider and wider as you go further down. The idea is that way the building is much more stable. So the point is, in other words, over here, you may have a house where on the ground, if you measure from wall to wall, is going to be, let's say, 8 amos across. But then when you get a few feet further up, it's going to be a little more than 8 amos. So therefore, by saying Loch Beke Kairosav means you have to add that width to the height of the house as well. Another possibility is you have to consider the beams have to go into something on the walls that are going to hold them up. So what you have is you have Cavity literally means windows. So you have like window shaped things in the walls into which the ends of the beams go. Nowadays also you can find in construction, like you have, there are holes part way or all the way through the wall, and the ends of beams go into the ends of joists go into those, and then they stretch across the house. So again, you may have the house is, let's say, 8 amas wide, but you have to have a recess in the wall of a half ama on each side, let's say, for the ends of the beams to fit into. So therefore, so therefore, the beam, in other words, is going to be not 8 amas long, but 9 amas, let's say, and therefore the height would be 9 amas in that case. Okay. So the Gemara tells, in connection with, we're talking about the Heichel, about the size of the Heichel, Rav Chanina nofek l'kir yosser. Rav Chanina went out to the villages one time. He may have gone there because he had farms over there that he wanted to check on. He may have gone over there to do business with them. Mesama also, he was teaching them Torah and doing Mitzrayim and whatever. Anyway, so you find in various places in Chas where it mentions about different Chachamim that went out l'kir yosser for these kinds of purposes. Anyway, Romo like Kroya Hadadi, while he was there, they pointed out to him a contradiction in the Pesukim. So you see also that these Poshti Yidden, the Kiryas over there, are very much into learning Torah, and they have a Talmud Chacham over there. They're going to grab the opportunity to ask him a question in Torah. Yeah. The house, the Beis Mikdash, the Heichel, particularly that Shlomo built for Hashem, Shishim Amma Orkei, the total length of the Kodesh plus the Kodesh Hakadoshim was 60 Amos, the Esrim Rach, by 20 Amos wide, or Shloshim Amma Kemase, and 30 Amos tall. Then, a few psukim later, it says, "V'lefnei ha-dvir," in front of the dvir. The dvir is actually, sometimes the word dvir is used for the Kodesh HaKadoshim, but here what it actually means, Mefoshim on the Pasuk explains, means Rashbam over here also explains the dvir is the wall between the Kurdish and the Kurdish HaKadoshim. In the first Beis Mikdash, they had a wall 1 amma thick between them. In the Mishkan, they had a parochas. In the first Beis Mikdash, they had a wall 1 amma thick. In the second Beis Mikdash, they couldn't build a wall for reasons that it talked about at the beginning of the Masechta. The building was taller, etc. So therefore, instead, they had 2 parochas in an amma apart. As we have in the Seder, Avodah of Yom Kippur, we have the details. Anyway, the point is that so Rashbam explains the Dvir refers to that wall that separated the Kodesh from the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So the Lefnei, in front of it, meaning, in other words, further back from it, Esrim Amma Orech, 20 Amas long, the Esrim Amma Reichav, and 20 Amas wide, the Esrim Amma Kemosa, and 20 Amas tall. So the Kodesh HaKadoshim, which comes out, was only 20 Amas tall, whereas the Kodesh, we said before, was 30 Amas tall. Now, Mephoshim on the Pasuk discuss various possibilities. Tosfos brings over here that Rashi on the Pasuk says, very simple, that's exactly what it was. The height of the Heichel, the height of the Kodesh was 30 Amos, and then the height of the ceiling of the Kodesh Kedoshim was lower, and it was only 20 Amos. Other Mephoshim on the Pasuk explained the whole thing was 30 Amos, but in the Kodesh Kedoshim, what they did is the bottom 20 Amos of the wall were covered with wood panels and then plated with gold, and the top 10 Amos were the walls were covered with various kinds of precious stones.
So in other words, when you were standing on top of a platform.
No, so in other words, you walk into the Kodesh, you have over there the Shulchan and the Menorah and the Mizbeach HaZahav, then you walk 40 Amos, then you get to the wall that separates the Kodesh from the Kodesh HaKadoshim. There's a doorway in the middle of the wall, and there's a Parochas hanging over that door, and then you walk in and you're in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, which is 20 by 20, but here the Pasuk is saying it was 20 Amos tall, whereas before we said the Heichel was 30 Amos tall. So how do you reconcile them? So again, Rashi on the Pasuk says that that's what it means. The Heichel was 30 Amos tall. Then when you went through that door into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, you're in a room which is only 20 Amos tall. The ceiling there was lower. Although Mephoshim explained, the ceiling was 30 Amos tall, but the top 10 Amos of the walls were inlaid with precious stones as opposed to the bottom 20 Amos were covered with wood panels which were then plated with gold. Anyway, but here Rav Chanina is going to give a different answer. He answers them, Kikahoshiv misfas kruhim ilamayla. When it says in the second pasuk, the 20 amas tall, doesn't mean the full height of the room. The full height was in fact 30 amas, but there were 20 amas from the top edge of the kruvim going upward. Now we have to realize as we go through the Gemara over here, there were two different sets of kruvim in the first Beis Hamikdash, and maybe in the second as well, not in the second as well, in the second they didn't have an Aron, but, there were the kruvim that were built onto the kaporas in the Oren that are described in Parshas Truma. Then you have Shlomo HaMelech for the first Beis Hamikdash made 2 gigantic kruvim out of wood plated with gold, and they stood on the floor as the Gemara is going to go on to say over here, their wings were outstretched across the whole Kodesh HaKadosh. The Kruvim on top of the Arden are just their wings are stretched over the Arden. Here you have Kruvim that are stretching their wings across the entire Kodesh HaKadosh. So those were 10 Amos, those were 10 Amos tall. So now, in other words, so above them, you have 20 Amos of empty space all the way up to the ceiling.
You'll have two sets of
Usually, everything that was in the Beis Mikdash was according to Hashem's instructions. I call the Ksav Miyad Hashem Alai Hiskil, David says to Shlomo. So yes, this was part of the blueprint that there should be these two big kruvim over there.
One on top of the Aron
and one covering the whole Kodesh HaKadoshim, yeah. So now you have above them, you have 20 Amos of empty space. So that's what the Pasuk means when it says 20 Amos.
Above the small
ones. Above the big ones. The big ones were 10 Amos tall. Above them, you have 20 Amos of empty space up to the ceiling. What was in that 20 Amos is, so to speak, the Shekhinah is there. The Shekhinah is resting in the Kodesh HaKadoshim above those top 20 Amos.
According to the others, by the Amaris, with all the gold and silver, all that.
So according to the other opinions, yeah, you have that there were 20 Amos of gold and 10 Amos of precious stones, or that Bechlal, the ceiling, was only 20 Amos tall, but yeah. So the Gemara says, "My Kamash Malon." Well, in that case, what's the point of mentioning that? Why is it important for us to know that there was 20 Amos of empty space? And the answer is, "How Kamash Malon, Lamata Kilamayla." From that, we learn that the space below the 10 Amos in which the Oren and the Kruvim were is like the space above. Malamayla in Mashamish Kruvim. The top 20 Amos we're saying is not being used for anything because there's nothing there. The same way the bottom 10 Amos is also not serving for anything. What do you mean not serving for anything? There's an Oren and a Kruvim over there. Well, that supports what Rav Levi says. We have the following, the Kabbalah, as a Masurah from our ancestors. The space that the Oren took up and the space that the Kruvim took up was not actually measurable. Meaning, as we know, the famous thing that you would go into if you went into the Kodesh HaKadosh, and the Kodesh HaKadosh was saying was 20 by 20 Amos, if you went and measured from the right side of the Aron to the nearest wall, you would find 10 Amos. If you measured from the left side of the Aron to the other wall, you would find 10 Amos. The Aron itself is 2.5 Amos wide. It took up space, but it didn't take up space at the same time. Nimna ha-nimnois, as we call it in Chassidus. It's in the world. It has a size, but it's also beyond the world and doesn't have a size. And the same thing with the Kruvim. So that's where the Pasuk is hinting at that by telling us that you have 20 Amos of empty space, even though it was actually 30 Amos of total height, because in other words, in all of that 30 Amos height, there's nothing that measures, there's nothing that takes up space. Everything is Einim and Amida. So now that Rashbam mentions over here, by the way, only to the right and to the left. He says in front of the Oren, you would have 20 Amos until the wall, which implies, in other words, that the Rashbam is learning that the Oren was placed all the way in the west, towards the west of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. There's different opinions about that, where the Oren was placed in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Was it exactly in the center? Was it towards the west, like the Rashbam was saying over here? Is it closer to the east? Whatever the case, the point is that you'd measure in the different sides from it, and you would find the total amount of space, even though you would think that the Oren takes up some of the space, because Makom Oren Einu Min Amida. But Gemara says, Tani Nami Hachi, we learn similarly in a Braisa, Oren Sha'asa Moshe, Yeshle Revach Asa Amos, the whole Ruach. The Oren that Moshe made, which was in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, in the first Beis Mikdash, there were 10 Amos of space on every side. Again, in other words, the total room is 20 Amos wide, and the Oren is 2.5 Amos wide, so you would expect then that you have only 17.5 Amos of empty space, and you would have then 8.75 on each side. But no, you would measure and find full 10 Amos on each side, because Makom Oren Einu Min Amida. So further, the Gemara mentions in this connection, Amar Abanoi Amar Shmuel, Kruvim Benes Hein Oinkim. These big Kruvim that we're talking about, that Shlomo HaMelech made, their bodies were all standing there Benes. The fact that their bodies were able to stand there itself was a ness. Shenema, because the Pesukim describe in Divrei Yomim, where it describes these Kruvim in more detail, actually in Melachim as well, the Chomish Amos Knapa Kruva Echos, the wing of one Kruv was 5 Amos, the Chomish Amos Knapa Kruva Shenis, and the second wing of the Kruv was also 5 Amos, so each Kruv's wings took up a total of 10 Amos. Esther Amos, Mikzos Knuffov, Ad Mikzos Knuffov, there were 10 Amos from the end, from the tips, from the tip of one wing to the tip of the other wing. That diagram in Rashbam will deal with soon. I mean, you can see with that diagram, you can get the idea of whether that the Kruvim are placed over their wing tip to wing tip. But yeah, the point is, in other words, that, So now, each kruv, in short, each kruv's wings took up a total of 10 amas. Now, you had two kruvim over there. The total extent of the wings, therefore, takes up 20 amas. Now, you need also room for the bodies, because on the face of it, the Gemara is assuming that the bodies were between the wings. You think of like most birds, for example. Yeah. You have a body in the middle and a wing on one side and a wing on the other. So the question would be then, so if they have five amas for each wing, and there were four wings taking up full 20 amas, then where are the bodies standing? So the Rashbam gives an explanation at length. The question is not so much the fact that the wings themselves were ten amas long. The question really is that the Gemara's proof rather is that. If you put the two wings of each kruv together are 10 amas, and you have that, then you have two kruvim standing one next to the other. So therefore, so where would you have room for the bodies? So that shows that the nes hoyomim, it shows the bodies must have been there, the derech nes, and their bodies also did not take up space. But that's the question. So that's the point. In other words, the Gemara is saying, since you have 10 amas per pair of wings, gufayu heicha habekaimi, where would the bodies have been able to stand if the body on the face of it is between the wings? Elishmami number nes and oimdin. Therefore, evidently they must have stood there b'derech nes. But maskufla abaya. But abaya says, how is that a proof? The duma built in katana golan havukaimi. Maybe not. Maybe like, for example, think of how the wings of a chicken are placed on its body. You don't have the body between the wings. You have the wings are next to each other along the back of it. So you may have had, in other words, wing one is five amas, wing two is five, and the body is in front of them. Rather, they're attached side by side to the back of the crew. So therefore, the body doesn't have to take up space between them. So you don't have to say the nest that I mean. Maskif lo Rava, and Rava says here's another possibility. The Duma Zeshala connected to Havokaimi. Maybe the Kruvim were standing not literally right next to another. So you could have, in other words, that there's a little bit, the wings of one Kruv are overlapping the wings of the other Kruv a little bit. Yes, they're touching, but you don't have to have that where one wing ends exactly, where the wing of one Kruv ends exactly, where the wing of the next one begins. Maybe they overlap by a couple of amas enough to provide space for the bodies. Maskif of Acha by Yaakov, and Acha by Yaakov says further. By the way, Tosfos points out, I mean, fine, even if you're going to say according to Abaya that they were Katana Golem, and then therefore the bodies didn't take up space between the wings, you still have the question that the wings are exactly 20 amas and the Kodesh HaKadoshim is exactly 20 amas. But fine, the point is, we're saying that the goof of them stood the Derech Nes. At least Abaya is saying you don't really have a proof for that. You want to say there was a nest that the wings of exactly 20 amas could fit in a space exactly 20 amas, where if it's exactly down to the. No, never mind where the body. That's Abaya is saying the body could be in front of the wings or behind the wings, however you look at it, like a chicken's body relative to its wings. You'd still have the question if the space is exactly 20 amas down to the millimeter, and the wings are exactly 20 amas down to the millimeter. Then how are they going to fit? Fine, that could be b'derech nes, but at least that was saying that the bodies were there b'derech nes now. Anyway, so Rava is saying they might have been shalokinagadzeh. They might have been one not exactly next to the other, but overlapping by a couple of inches.
The wings?
Not the wing of one relative to the wing of the other. In other words, if here's one kruv and here's the other, the Gemara is assuming they were right next to each other. Maybe not. Maybe they were like this a little bit. Maybe one of them was standing over here. The other one was standing over here, and it's overlapping a little bit rather than next to. And that would provide room for the bodies. And Maskif of Acha by Yaakov Duma Balachsona Havakaimi. Rabbi Acha by Yaakov continues, what about they might have been on a diagonal? Here's where you have the picture in the Rashbam that he draws them. That, in other words, you might have, say, for example, the end of one wing of the kruv was in the southwest corner and then went across diagonally halfway across the room, and the other one picks up from there, and the diagonal is long enough. So you have 28 amas, a square of 20 amas. The diagonal is a little over 28 amas. That provides plenty of room for the bodies between the wings, even if you say the bodies were actually between the wings rather than, like Abaya said, like chickens. Now, that's according to Rashbam. A number of Mefarshim don't really like that explanation because the Pasuk makes it clear that it went from the south wall to the north wall, not from the corners. Marsha says actually that what it might be, the Gemara might mean that maybe they were placed in a V shape. In other words, here you have a diagram, you have some diagrams in Marsha over here that show maybe, in other words, you have one crew standing like this and the other one standing like this. So they're all wingtip to wingtip, and the wings are touching the respective walls, but you still have enough room because you're placing each one on a diagonal rather than putting it straight across the room. So also you could say then that it doesn't mean that the goof of the kruvim have to be standing in the derech nes. And Maski sort of Honabredi Rishua, the Duma Besami Loi Rava. We also just said before that rooms are often a little wider as you go further up. So maybe on the floor it was exactly 20 amas, and by the time you get to the height of the wings of the Kruvim, maybe it's a little wider, so therefore you have enough room. Maski sort of Papa, and Rapapa says, I have yet another proof. The Duma Maketh have a Kaifa Yadaihu. Another possibility is that their wings might have been bent downwards a little bit. So in other words, you're assuming the wings were extended straight out, but who says they might have been bending, they might have been drooping down, they might have been made in such a way that they're drooping downward a little bit. And Maski Chlor of Ashi, the Duma Shalchufi have a Mashalchufi. Yet another possibility is that maybe the wings of each kruv overlap the other. Meaning, in other words, Rashbam compares it to like when a person, is clasping his hands together. So maybe the kruvim, maybe the wings of each kruv were constructed in a way, not that they're spread out in the outward from the body, but rather, for example, like they're crossing over one another in front of the body, like a person would do with his hands like this, for example. So in that case, each wing is five amas long, but it's the length of it includes the width of the body rather than being on the other side of it. So you have a lot of different possibilities, therefore, that the Chachamim are saying to make it work without having to resort to a nes. Which is why, actually, at the top of the Amud, when we said Mokum Orna Kruvim Enem En Amidya, a number of Mefarshim don't have, in other places where the Gemara brings this point, it doesn't say the word of Kruvim, and a number of Mefarshim point out it doesn't belong in our Gemara over here, because based on what we're saying, we don't have to say that the Kruvim were standing the Derech Nes, the Oren, unquestionably, because they were saying that there was 10 amas on each side of it, and that would be impossible given that the Oren itself takes 2.5 amas, but as far as the Kruvim, maybe not necessarily. Next, the Gemara says, Now, in what position were these two big kruvim standing? A Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar. Chad amak pneim ishal achiv. One's between Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar. One says they were placed so that their faces faced one another. V'chad amak pneim labois. The other one says that they were facing towards the house. Now, towards the house, there are actually two different possibilities. The Ritual brings, it might, the Rashbam explains that they're facing outward towards the Heichel. So in other words, we're talking in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the Kruvim were placed, according to this opinion, so that their faces are facing toward they're across the room. They're going from one side of the room to the other, and their faces are pointing towards the outside, as if like when you come into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, you would see them facing towards you. According to the other opinion, they were facing each other. Then the Ritual brings another way that you could understand that Yesh Mefarshim is that it means they were facing towards the back wall of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, which means when you would walk in, you would see the backs of their heads. So the question is, the fact is, though, that we find a pasuk that describes these kruvim that their faces were towards the bias. So how does he understand? So how can he say that they were ishal achiv? And the answer is like Kasha, kan bizman she yisrael oisin utzon shamokim, kan bizman she yisrael oisin utzon shamokim. To begin with, they place them face to face. But then, when they're not oisin utzon shamokim, then a nes would happen, and they would turn away from one another, and therefore that's what the pasuk describes as pneim laboyus. So it doesn't mean, in other words, when they put them in there to begin with, that they put them in that position, but it means, in other words, that afterwards, at times, during the time of the first Beis Hamikdash, they would now the truth is actually so the Rashbam points out like this. First of all, the pasuk of Fneim Ishal Achiv and the pasuk of Fneim Lavoyis are actually dealing with the two different sets of Kerubim. Fneim Ishal Achiv is by the ones on the top of the Oren itself. The Pneim Lavoyis is talking about the two big ones. However, the Rashbam points out the Gemara is assuming that both of them were the same way. If one of them was Pneim Ishal Achiv, if one set was Pneim Ishal Achiv, then the other set should also be like that. So the answer would be then that to begin with, they made them Pneim Ishal Achiv, but then there would be times when there would be Pneim Labayis, and therefore the Pasuk is phrasing it that way in the description of the Bais Mikdash. Keep in mind that the whole description, Sefer Melachim, was written by Yirmiyahu on Navi after the Churban. So he's describing in the long run, and in the long term, it wasn't Pneim Ishal Achiv many times during the time of the first Bais Mikdash, it was a Pneim Labayis. Marsha, considering that the Rashbam learns that Pneim Labayis means they're facing towards the outside, they're facing towards the Kodesh, Marsha says the symbolism of it is when in Osin with Sonish Amokim, then they're placed in a way as though like we're ready to leave. And in fact, at the end of the first Bais Mikdash, Yechezkel sees a series of nevuos where he sees the Shekhinah descending from the Kruvim and leaving the Bais Mikdash. So therefore, symbolically, the Kruvim, when Oinos and Ratzon Hashamakim, are facing towards the door as if to say, like, we're ready to leave whenever Hashem tells us to. So that would be Pneim Labayis. Olamanda Omo Pneim Labayis of Siv of Pneim Ishal Achiv. What about according to the opinion that Pneim Labayis, what about the Pasuk says, of Pneim Ishal Achiv? You're certainly not going to say that the Pasuk then is describing that to begin with, they place them in the way Pneim Labayis. Of course, they wouldn't have done that. They would have placed them in the way that's Oisin Ratzon Hashamakim. And the answer is Dematsadadi Atsadurdi. According to that opinion, it doesn't mean they weren't directly facing the door. It means they were facing a little bit towards the door and a little bit to each other. So their faces were on an angle. So when you walk in, you see like you don't see their face full on, according to this opinion. You see them like sort of looking at each other, but not completely. So therefore that's how he understands. On the one hand they're Ishal Achiv, but they're also it's like when you look at somebody from the corner of your eye, sort of. So that would be the position in which the heads of the Kruvim, in which the heads and the faces of the Kruvim were made, that they're partially facing each other, but partially facing towards Labayis, whether we learn Labayis meaning towards the door or towards the wall.
So according to this mandama they didn't move around when
So according to this mandama they didn't necessarily move around, right. Aside from that, now you do have the Gemara mentions in Yuma that at the time of the Churban, when the Goyim came into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, they found the Kruvim not just looking at each other but embracing one another. And that was, and then the Goyim took it to mean, look at that, the Jewish people are involved in unsmiastic activities, and they humiliated the Jewish people for it. Really, it represented at that time Hashem was showing the ultimate closeness to the Jewish people, and therefore Shofa Chamos al Eitzim Avonim. Poured out his anger on the wood and stones rather than on Jewish lives. We just saw that yesterday, actually. Wood and stones all over Eretz Yisrael were being harmed by the missiles, and then nobody was killed by Hashem except for one guy.
So Tosfos and
Rishonim discuss over there, which Kruvim are we talking about? At the time of the Churban, anyway, there was no, the Oren wasn't there, because the Oren, according to most opinions, was hidden away by Yeshayahu 30 odd years before the Churban. So either we're talking about the big set, the ones made out of wood plated with gold. Another possibility that Tosfos and other Rishonim discuss over there is there's also Kruvim Ditzurta. Pesukim described there in Melachim how besides that you had these two sets of Kruvim, in addition on the walls you had figures of Kruvim intermingled with figures of palm trees. So you'd have a Kruv, a palm tree, a Kruv, a palm tree, and various other designs like that all over the walls. So the Kruvim that the Goyim saw embracing one another at the time of the Churban may have been those Kruvim that were engraved or painted on the walls.
And there was silver on the walls also?
There was gold on the walls as well, yeah. So, yeah. So the Gemara says, the Tanya, as in fact we learn in a Braisa, Unkelos HaGer Oimer, Unkelos, the famous Ger who wrote Targum Unkelos.
They call him Unkelos HaGer.
Yeah. It's an honor to him that he was a Ger, that he was a nephew of a Roman emperor and he had the gumption to become a Ger, yeah. So Omar, he says, Kruvim Masit Tzatzurim Heim, he explained that the Kruvim were made like Tzatzurim. Nah, so Tzatzurim modern Hebrew, right. Tzatzurim means toys. In Tanakh, Satsurim means children, like the word Satsurim. So they were made like children. They have the faces of children. They have the faces of children. As the Gemara explains in Chagiga, the word Kruvim is Kiravya in Aramaic, and the word Ravya means a child. So they're called Kiruvim, Kiravya in Aramaic, because they have the faces of children. So they're made like children. And with Sedodim Pneim, so their faces are partially facing to one another, Talmud Hanifta Merabbe, like the kind of position that a Talmud has his face in when he's taking the leave of his Rebbe, where he doesn't face his Rebbe full on, but he's getting ready to leave, so like he turns a little bit to the side, so he's not turning his back on his Rebbe. So that's the mass, that's the mitzvah of the duty. So according to that opinion, the lachat chila, they were placed like that, and the pashtus, they stayed that way throughout the time of the first listening.
According to this, that's a terrible, two children are embracing one another. When
no, so they're not embracing, right, so that's the thing, the embracing is something else. The kruvim that we're embracing are described in the psukim, described in the psukim malachim, as kemar ish v'loyis, they were made in the form of a man and a woman.
That's what I'm saying,
that's what Tosfos and other Rishonim discuss over there, that those may have been the ones that are on the walls, rather than the two big ones that we're talking about over here. Alright, Mishnah says, if a person has a pit, a water pit, further in, inside somebody's house, or in back of somebody's house. So we talked about an earlier parakim we had, you could have, for example, where Reuven had a property and that contained a bird in it, and he sold the property and kept the bird for himself. Or we could have two brothers split up the inheritance, and one of them inherited the house and the other one the bird, whatever the case. So now he needs to be able to get back and forth to his burr. So we're assuming there's not a problem with the means of entrance. We're talking about he has his easement to be able to get in and out, as we were discussing previously in the fourth parak on that topic. So that's not the problem. The question is, can he just come and go and as he pleases? He's going to be barging into the guy's house and making him have to open the door at all hours of the night. So no. He can go in to draw water from the well at normal times when people usually
business hours.
He has to leave at a time when people normally leave, because that way he's not being matriach, the balabayas, to get out of bed and go open the door for him. He can't bring in his animal. He can't bring in the animal to give it water from the pit, because that's not something that he needs. Rather, he has to draw a bucket of water, and then he can give his animal to drink outside, because there's no reason that he should bother the balabayas to bring his animal in when he could just as well do it this way. That wasn't, again, obviously a kol kamidag amadina, and obviously if they made other arrangements, they made other arrangements. But we're talking about over here if they didn't make any special arrangements. Each one of them has to make a lock for the well, or for the area where the well is. And we'll see, and then we're going to see in the Gemara why. We're talking about a lock to the area of the well. So first of all, the Gemara asks Pesachas Lahecha. First of all, the Mishnah had just said that each one needs a lock. Each one needs a key for the lock. But the question is, the Mishnah hadn't specified where this lock is and where this key is. So Amar Rabbi Yechanan Shneim Labur. It doesn't mean, you would think maybe it means the Balabais has a key to the house, and the guy who owns the burr has a key to the burr. No, what it actually means is both of them have to have a key for the burr. They have to have their own lock on the burr. In other words, it's not going to be possible to go in there without both of them involved. So, b'shleima bala burr burri lishtamuri ma'ayda burr. I understand why the owner of the burr would have a lock and a key, because he wants to make sure that the balabais is not going to take water from it when he's not around. So he wants to keep it locked up when it's not in use. Ela balabais lomalei. Why does the balabais have to have a lock there? And the answer is Amar Abalazar. Mishum chashad ishtoi, because otherwise there's going to be suspicion with his wife. There's going to have this guy, the owner of the burr, is going to be able to go in there if he uh, If he goes in there, if he's able to go in anytime he wants during the day, the problem is the wife is going to be home. There's going to be, even if there's not an issue of yichud, there's at least going to be a matter of chashad that people are going to suspect that something's going wrong. Now, Rashbam points out that the Baal HaBayis doesn't have to worry about that the owner of the bor might steal anything from his house because his wife is there to watch and make sure nothing gets stolen. But there might be chashad that why is he going in there? So therefore, like this, you have both of them have to have a lock. In other words, he can't go in to get water unless both of them are there. So the Baal HaBayis himself is going to have to be home as well when the guy comes and wants water from his bor, and therefore that'll avoid any issues.
The owner from the bor is actually the guy who doesn't live in the house?
Right. That's the point. The house, that Reuven lives in the house, Shimon is going to have to walk through the house to get to his bor. So therefore we're saying that now the area with the bor has to be protected by a lock, by two locks, one with the key belonging to Reuven, one belonging to Shimon, so both of them have to be there, and that avoids any problems. Exactly. Okay, Mishnah continues. Similarly, Mishiyesh Legina Lefnim Meginose Shachadei, right? A person has a garden behind somebody else's garden, where again, the only way to get to the inner garden is by going through the outer one. So the same thing, the same thing now. So again, so that it has to, we're talking about that he has an easement to go through. That's not a problem. But the fact is, he's going to have to be walking through the middle of the other guy's garden. So again, nichnas v'derech shederech shederech v'ne'adam nichnasin v'yotze v'derech shederech shederech v'yotze v'derech v'shar shederech v'ne'adam yotzin. So he can only go in and out during regular business hours or whatever, normal times that are to go in and out. The Rashbam points out, after all, because he's walking in the middle of his field, so that's a big hezek for him. Therefore, he has restrictions on when he can go in and out. Same way as we said in the previous Mishnah, where he's going in and out of the guy's house, and it's a big hezek that somebody else is coming into my house. The same way over here, it's a big hezek that you're walking into my garden. Therefore, he puts up rules over here of only certain times or whatever.
And at certain times, a hezek is going to go, hezek?
At least, at least you're not having that he can come there anytime. He's willing to do only what he really needs for it. He has to be able to get to his garden sometime, but not stand to go in there anytime he wants. He can't bring in merchants over there. So let's say now he's grown vegetables or whatever it is in his garden, and now he wants to sell them. So is he allowed, if he had free access to the garden, he would be able, anytime he wants, he could bring in merchants and show them, look, I have X number of pounds of potatoes or whatever it is, do you want to buy them? Here he can't do that. Because again, that's not part of the, instead, if you want, he'll have to bring out the produce and show it to the tag room outside, similar to what we had with watering his animal. He also can't use it as a shortcut to begin with, that he's going to use it to go into another field of his. So again, the owner of the outer garden is not meshabed him his garden to that extent that he should be able to use it as a shortcut. Now, to be sure, once he is there for the purpose of the garden, once he is there in order to water his garden or plant it or whatever, then he's allowed to go wherever he wants. If now, after he went in there, he wants to go from there directly to his other field, Yuzun Dehe, the Ritva, and the Nemukha Yosef point out, we just mean al-Tachila to go in there. In a way, it's al-Derech like you have with a shul. You can't go into a shul planning to use it as a shortcut. But if you went into a shul to daven or to learn or whatever, and then you want to go out the other doors, so you have a shorter walk, then you can do that. So here it's similar. The one who owns the outer garden is allowed to plant along that path. It's gonna be a little bit of a hassle for the other guy that now he's gonna have to walk around the plants. Doesn't matter. The fact is, it is the middle of his field. So Rashbam says, Anan Sadi, we can be sure we are Adim that he wasn't moichel him the path completely to the extent where he can't even plant there, where he loses that land. And for planting, no, he can plant there, and the guy is gonna have to step over and around the plants when he walks in and out. On the other hand, suppose that instead of there being a path going right through the middle of the field, what would happen if Beistin got involved and they gave him a path along the side? So let's say, for example, to begin with, there was no easement or whatever, and now the guy inside is complaining, I have to have some way of getting to my field, and I have reason to say that I should have one because Moshe Bayin Yoffa Moshe or whatever the considerations that we talked about in a previous parak, And fine, and Basin gets involved and says that, yes, that's fine. We'll give you a pass. Now, the point is, Rabbi Yonah explains that, on the other hand, you could say, the inner ones could say, why should I have to go from the side, which is a long way around? I should be able to get a path directly through your field. So each one of them has, so each one of them has a claim. The one saying, I don't want you to have to walk in the middle of my field. And the other one saying, I don't want to have to walk the long way around. So let's say, for example, so Basin gets involved and make sure, okay, at least you'll have something. You'll have a kaponim, you'll have something on the side.
Oops.
Yeah. So, so then that's different. Now it's not directly through his field. So therefore, midas shnei, and both of them ended up agreeing to that. So then, fine. Nichnas b'shalsha roitzah v'yotzah b'shalsha roitzah. Then he can go in and out whenever he wants. He's not going through the other guy's garden directly. He's just going along the side. Or machnas asecha tagrim. He can bring merchants in along that path if he wants, because again, he's not causing any hezek to the other guy. V'lo yikonis v'tochel asecha sadacheres. Even then, though, he still shouldn't use it as a shortcut to just go to another field. And in that case, neither one of them is allowed to plant it, because now it's meant only for walking. Okay. So the Gemara tells in this connection, so we're talking about where somebody has, let's say, a garden that he has to walk through somebody else's garden or field or whatever in order to reach it. So here in a similar vein, we're going to talk about, you might have that Reuven owns a field and he sells or leases or whatever, Shimon, an area in that field where he can build a, where he can dig a water channel. So you have, let's say, for example, Reuven and Shimon have fields next to each other. Shimon's field needs to be irrigated. The river is, the river that he can irrigate from is, he'd have to go through Reuven's field to get to it. So therefore he wants to dig a channel through Reuven's field to bring the water to his field. So he arranges with Reuven to buy or to lease an area for that. So Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Amar Beis HaShochan Ani Moichaloch. If then Reuven says to Shimon, I'm selling you the rights to build a channel over there to water your Beis HaShochan, to water your field that needs irrigation. So what he has to do then is the minimum width of it, he has to give him 2 amas wide, because, and in other words, the point is that Rashbam says, even if, let's say, you have a channel that's there already, and he wants to make it wider, he's allowed to up to 2 amas wide. In addition, there also has to be reserved an ama on each side of the channel for the banks of it. Because what happens is, over time, the sides of it tend to collapse because the water constantly flowing through them over time and undermines them. So therefore, what you do is you have 1 amma of space on either side from which you can take dirt to rebuild those walls of the channel. Rabbi Nagersha makes a slightly different point on it. He says, like this, the way that Ashbam is describing it, the pastors were talking about the walls that are below the ground level. In other words, you have the water channel itself. After all, the bottom of it is below ground level. It's called an amma because typically it's an amma deep. So you have the sides of it are going to be an amma tall until the level of the field. Rabbi Nagersha learns a little differently and says we're talking about also above the level of the field. You need a little bit because you need to have dikes along the side of it to keep the water going where it's supposed to and prevent it under control. So those, the point is, again, over time, those tend to deteriorate, and eventually you need some dirt to rebuild them. So therefore, that dirt is going to come from this 1 amma on each side.
Or you see the dirt sides that are not formalizing inside, and you see all the sides.
No, because the problem is some of that dirt gets washed away. Some of that dirt gets washed away into the next field or into wherever, and you're not going to go schlep it all the way from there. And the point is also you don't want to continue digging the channel deeper and deeper, because you don't want the channel to be too deep. You want to be able to irrigate from it easily. If it's too deep, it's going to be hard to. So therefore, you want to keep it approximately an amma deep. So where you're going to get the dirt to rebuild the walls of it is going to be from the sides of it there. Then Rashbam brings a second explanation from Rabbeinu Yaakov Bar Yochor, who was one of Rashi's Rabbeim, that explains differently. What it means is actually the width. So again, a point of the first explanation was saying the total area of the amma with everything that has to do with it is 4 ammas, 2 for the channel itself and 1 on each side. Then Rashbam's second explanation from Rabbeinu Yaakov Bar Yochor, which he prefers, is that the total width actually is two amas. When we say amamikan, but amamikan lagapeha means those two amas, means in other words, you have total two amas, and within those two amas, within the two amas is the agapeha, yeah. I said it wrongly. It's one should have been a yaka bar yaka. Rather, the vote is that you have the ama itself as an ama wide, and then you have one ama on each side. So instead of according to the first explanation, you have four amas that you're talking about, one, two, and one. Instead of according to the yaka bar yaka, you have three, one, one, and one. So that's when you have that. Ama besakulan ani moichaloch. On the other hand, if he says that, on the other hand, if he says that I'm selling you an amma, which is going to be used for a base hakiloin, which is going to be used to, to water it using a kiloin. Well, first of all, Rashbam brings a gius, a siloin, which would be a pipe, like you can place a pipe in there rather than just having the water flow. The other thing of a kiloin is that it's a contraption that they use mainly not so much for irrigating fields, but for giving animals to drink and washing clothes and dishes and things like that. So an ama beis hakiloin doesn't have to be as big as an ama samayim that's used to irrigate a field. There you need a lot more water. An ama beis hakiloin, an ama siloin, you need a lot less. Therefore, noisim le ama achas l'seicha. Therefore, the width of the actual water channel itself needs to be only one ama. V'chatzi ama mikan v'chatzi ama mikan l'agapeha, and a half ama on each side to provide a space from which you can take dirt to rebuild the walls of it. Or, according to the Yaka Bar Yaka, it means the whole thing is only two amas wide. One amma wide, the channel would still be an amma wide. That's why it's called an amma. But in that case, you only need half an amma on each side. For osin agapayim mizura. Now, what about then? We're saying you have these reserved areas on both sides of it that are meant to take dirt from to rebuild the walls when necessary. Who gets to plant those areas? Do they actually belong to the one who owns the water channel, or do they still belong to the person who owns the field, and just basically they're available for the guy who owns the amas hamayim to use?
Right. So you have no dirt then.
You're going to have some dirt. The question is, you don't want to give it up completely. So Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel Bala Sadeh Zerim. So Rabbi Yehuda says in the name of Shmuel that the owner of the field can plant in that area. Rabbi Nachman Amar Shmuel, and Rabbi Nachman says Bala Sadeh Noitam. No, Bala Sadeh Noitam. So Rabbi Nachman agrees that it would be the Bala Sadeh, but he says that instead of planting Zerim would mean he could plant, for example, vegetables or grain or whatever over there, Noitam would mean he can plant only trees. The difference is Manda Amar Zerim Koshken Noitam. Rabbi Yehuda, who says that you could plant them with seeds, would agree for sure you could plant trees over there. Because the point is, the roots of the trees go very far below ground. The area where they're going to go, where they're going to start spreading out, is far below the level of the amma. The amma itself, the water channel, is only an amma deep. So the roots are going to penetrate into the ground, and when they start spreading out in the different directions, it's going to be much more than an amma below ground, and therefore no problem. It's not going to harm the amma samayim at all. As opposed to grains and vegetables and things like that, which have very shallow roots, those are going to start undermining the thing, and then eventually the sides of the channel are going to collapse. So according to him, though, he says you could even plant over there grains or vegetables or whatever. So all the more so that you could, all the more so you could plant trees over there. Umanda amanotam, whereas Reb Nachman, who says that you could only plant trees, that means only trees. I will zordam loy, but not to plant seeds, because chacholi machalchali, because then those penetrate, then those undermine the soil, and they're going to cause the amas hamayim to collapse. Tosfos, by the way, points out in this connection, we have over here an amas hamayim, and then we have an amas hakiloin. Then you have something else. You have a canal that's used, a larger canal that everybody in that area uses to irrigate their fields from. That's wider. The whole thing is going to be four amas wide. Here we're talking about a regular amma is two amas wide according to Rashbam's first explanation, and one amma wide according to the second. An amas hakiloin is one amma or a half amma according to the different explanations. But then you have an actual canal. So this is for one person's particular field. Then you have a nigra, it's called an Aramaic, a canal that's used to water all the fields in that vicinity, and that one is wider. That's 400.
That's be wider,
yeah.
Smaller.
Yeah.
So what's the difference in kilo and the
amos? So the difference is a regular amos hamayim is used to irrigate a field, a base hashochan, a field where rainwater is not enough for it, and you have to irrigate it artificially.
Okay.
So then you have an amos hamayim where, according to Rashbam's first explanation, it's two amos wide and one amma deep. And according to Rabbi Yaakov Bar Yochai, it's one amma wide and one amma deep. That's the first kind. That's amos hamayim. Then you have amasakiloin, which is a smaller water channel, which is used only, as the Rashbam said, you use it for giving you animals to drink, you use it for washing dishes and clothes. So therefore, it only has to be one amma wide and one amma deep. Or according to Rabbi Yaakov Bar Yochai, it means that it only needs to be a half amma wide and an amma deep. So the Amr of Yehuda Amr Shmuel, also Rabbi Yehuda says in the name of Shmuel, in more in this connection than with the dinim of Amma Samayim, Amma Samayim Shekolu Agapeha, when the sides of it are collapsing in and you don't have enough, what would happen if you don't have enough dirt in those two Amas to be able to rebuild it? So let's say over the years you've used all the dirt that's in those two Amas and now you don't have anything left. So where are you supposed to rebuild your Amos Hamayim? So Masaknam, Oisasada, so Rabbi Yehuda says that you can use other dirt from elsewhere in the field as well, via Duash, like Kolo Agapeh, all about Oisasada. Because where did all that dirt go? It's in that field. So therefore, in other words, it got spread out over time into that field, so now he's able to take from that field. So the Papa says, what do you mean? Why can't the owner of the field say to the owner of the Amos Hamayim, on the contrary, your water is what undermined it, is what took away the dirt and took it someplace else? Why are you assuming that the dirt ended up in my field, where it could just well as well be that your water over time swept it away and it landed in your field or something? Why should I have to give dirt from my field to rebuild your Amos Hamayim? In fact, another point is as well. I mean, in that case, then what's the point of having the two amas in the first place? The Rashbam explains, to begin with, when he gave him one amma on each side, means, in other words, again, we said before, the owner of the field can't do things over there that are going to ruin it. He can, according to the different opinions, plant grain or trees or whatever over there, but not to do other things. The rest of his field, he can do whatever he wants with. Now we're saying, though, the owner of the amma still has the right to take dirt from elsewhere in the field where necessary to fix his agapayim. But again, our Papa is saying, you said the owner of the amma is going to say, well, where did my dirt end up? It ended up in your field, Reuven, and therefore I should take it back. But can't Reuven answer back? On the contrary, no. It got over time.
Continued on.
The current of your water transported dirt more and more. There was sediment in the water, and it landed in your field, or it landed someplace else, or whatever. Why should I have to give you dirt from elsewhere in my field to rebuild it? Ella, I'm gonna papa. No, the reason is Shamanaskin Kibalala Balasada. The reason is because the owner of the field to begin with, when he sells a space for an Amos Hamayim in his field, it's understood that it also included in that is that over time it's gonna deteriorate and he's gonna need to take dirt from elsewhere in the field in order to repair it, and that's, in other words, implicitly that's included, and therefore he has to allow him to take that. Again, the point is, in other words, as the Rashbam said, that the difference is, to begin with, the owner of the field is restricted in what he can do in the amma on each side, but elsewhere in his field he can do whatever he wants. But in terms of, that's because those places are mainly reserved for him to be able to rebuild when necessary. But in addition, if there's not enough dirt over there, then he still is entitled to take from the rest of the field, and Rapapa says that's because that was the understanding to begin with when he sold him the space for the amma samayim. Okay.